Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease and a whole lot of love, you transform 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. LED headlights, spoilers, whatever you need. eBay Motors has it at affordable prices. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride every time. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
This pod is brought to you by Brand MN. They're a Minnesota company that makes awesome shirts and more for Minnesotans. So odds are, if you're listening to this podcast, which you are, they've got something that you'll love. I personally like the Scratching Post shirt. It's a picture of a cat scratching on the WNBA championship trophy. It's for the Minnesota Lynx, and it can be yours. All you have to do is go to brandmn.com and use the code AWAW for 15% off your order. Your closet will thank you.
Welcome back to the Wolf Among Wolves podcast. I am your host, Brendan Hetke, and you can find me on Twitter at @B_HetkeNBA. You can find the show on Twitter at @AWAW_podcast. And as always, this podcast is a part of the Wolf Among Wolves podcast network. You can find the Wolf Among Wolves at a Wolf Among Wolves blog on Twitter. And today on the show, we have a very special guest. I am once again joined by the one and only Jack Borman of Canisupis. How's it going, Jack?
I'm doing well, man. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. You have to be the most frequent recurring guest on Timberwolves podcast throughout quarantine. I'm pretty sure that's your award. You're on with me often. You're on with Jake Painting often. You been on anything else lately?
I did a show, the Posting and Toasting show, which is the Knicks SB Nation blog podcast with Schwinn and Drew out there. Couple of really awesome dudes out there. But other than that, no, I've just been kind of jumping all over the place, having fun with it. So
yeah, we have a lot more free time now than we probably ever have. So
yeah, that's for sure.
Anyway, so Jack and I are today going to be talking about power forwards. Obviously, power forwards seems like the most controversial, pivotal. There's many words to describe the power forward for the Timberwolves, but I would say like it's a very unique position for the Timberwolves considering we don't. We've heard from Gerson Rosas about running, you know, multiple big men, not really his style of play. So what do you think your, like, traits for a power forward would be? What are, like, the most important ones? Let's start out with that.
So if you're asking me for my personal opinion, not really taking into mind what Gers is looking for, I would say for me personally, next to Cat would be he's got to be able to rebound and defend the rim, because there's no doubt in my mind that the Timberwolves are going to try and switch Cat more as opposed to playing him in drop coverage. I just think that he's too athletic to have him sit back and not go up and attack guys. There were a ton of different games where the Wolves just got continually killed in the PNR, especially against the Clippers with Kawhi. Paul George.
They both dropped 40 in one of those games, so that was not good.
Yeah, and I think the drop coverage had a lot to do with that. But anyways, so I think that your big has to be able to defend the rim when Cat gets taken away. He's got to be able to battle on the glass. But then, two, I really do think that any guy that the Wolves take has to be able to switch on to at least shooting guards and small forwards. I understand if you're not going to switch the one, maybe in a pick and roll, but he's got to be able to defend 2 through 5. And I really hope that it doesn't get lost on the front office that the four in their mind at least should be able to switch on to meatier, bigger fives, like a guy like Marc Gasol or Jonas Valanciunas, guys that are legit fives. So whether that actually happens or not, it still remains to be seen. But I think it's also important to note that I don't really think a power forward in this system has to be able to shoot. I think that being able to defend multiple positions and fit into different types of lineups just because of defensive versatility is more important to me, or is at the top of that list for me.
Yeah. Yeah, so basically I wrote about power forwards a few weeks, I don't know, maybe it was even over a month ago, but basically I thought of four skills that were pretty important, and that was, you know, size to defend the rim, and the not just the size, but like the ability to do it, because there's guys that have the size. Naz Reid has the size, he just doesn't do it. They have to be a rebounder, like you said. And then I said they have to be have the ability to handle the ball and pass a little bit. And this is more so for how I feel Gerson Rosas views a power forward,
right,
more than how I personally do. And then I said they have to have a decent jump shot. You know, they don't have to light the world on fire, but just have a decent jump shot. And so those are my four. And do you think that's how Gers is really, you know, thinking about this?
Yeah, I think especially the other thing I would add to that would be that he wants switchability on defense to play down.
Yeah.
And what I mean by that is to be able to switch on to point guards, shooting guards, and small forwards.
Right.
Just because I think that the Timberwolves are, and what I think he's alluding to with what he's saying is that the Timberwolves are going to do a lot of switching in terms of 1 through 4, but maybe not so much with Cat.
Yeah.
And that is what it is. You know, I really hope that Vanderpool can kind of assert himself and say, hey, you know, you guys brought me here to lead the defense, and, you know, don't tell me what to do with Cat.
Yeah.
And try something new, just because I think it was Travis Lilechek made a really good point on Twitter earlier this week with saying that, you know, defense is kind of where Cat's legacy lies, in the sense that people always point to, oh, you know, his defense isn't very good.
Yeah.
That's why Cat's not really mentioned enough with guys like Jokic and Embiid. And I think he should be able to switch to be able to utilize that athleticism more and kind of make the game a little bit easier for everybody else around him too. But yeah, I think outside of that, in terms of ability to handle the ball and pass, I think that was a really good one that I forgot to mention. I love that. And then a decent jump shot too. I think that whoever the Wolves are going to bring in at the four is going to be able to, is really going to be able to shoot the ball.
Right.
And then the other point too that I think might be interesting is kind of maybe play a guy in terms like the dunker spot, kind of at the four.
Yep.
So maybe a guy like Derrick Jones Jr. Just because I think that his athleticism rolling down to the rim, especially vertically, would just be really tough to stop, especially if Cat's spread out to the corner or the wing.
Yep.
Would just be an interesting element to add. So I think they can really go a lot of different ways, but the defensive switching versatility down, shooting, and then probably the ability to kind of be a secondary initiator would be what I think they're gonna focus on the most this offseason at the four.
Yeah, and I think Derrick Jones Jr. is he's a interesting option because he would be versatile enough to switch down to he's probably traditionally a three, but in this
yep.
team he could play the four, and you could switch him down to the two, the three, possibly even the one at times. But the thing with him is I doubt his ability to guard the rim, just because he is a little bit smaller than, you know, those bigs you talk about, like Valanciunas and Nurkic and Hassan Whiteside and all these big centers. So I think he would struggle a little bit there. But so I've been trying to think of molds. And I was talking in, we have our Wolf Among Wolves group chat, and I got a little heat for this because I think I worded it poorly. Basically, I was saying, like, it's ironic that Kevin Garnett is the Wolves' best player in history, and that's the type of player we need right now for this team. And then I said, you know, basically all we need is Kevin Garnett. Well, then Tim says, all we need is Kevin Garnett. And I was like, no, that's not what I meant. Like, Kevin Garnett would be nice, but really what I'm saying is we need someone in the mold of Kevin Garnett. And there's some options in the league that there are a few guys in that mold. One of them, not available, obviously, but this is the guy I think would be perfect, is Pascal Siakam. I think he would be the absolute perfect power forward to put on this team. But there's a couple other guys we can talk about in a little bit. But do you think a KG type, we're never going to have a KG. He's a top five defender of all time, maybe even one of the best, maybe the best defender of all time. But do you think someone in that mold would be like the perfect player here?
Yeah, you know, I think a guy, if you're looking at someone that can really really defend, and that's kind of his primary role, would be a guy like Rondae Hollis-Jefferson sticking with the Raptors, just because he's a guy that definitely can switch down. He, again, was kind of traditionally more of a three, played more of the three when he was in Brooklyn.
I think he even might have started his career as like a shooting guard too. Like, I think his career has transpired in a weird way.
Yeah, I mean, he could have. I know that he's not really a guy that's a threat to shoot whatsoever. So I think that's probably what influenced the move,
right,
to move kind of further up the lineup. But I think that he's a guy that can definitely switch down. Also, a guy that's definitely big and bulky enough to switch on to bigger guys and really pack the paint, rebound, and try and defend and block shots at the rim. But yeah, I completely agree that Pascal is exactly that type of guy in terms of the primary and ancillary skills that he possesses. I mean, obviously he's not going anywhere, but it is definitely an interesting mold to look at. I think that when you look at the draft, I think you might be able to hit gold a little bit more there rather than free agency, just because the guys that are in free agency, I think we know a little bit more about. Mm-hmm. Whereas obviously guys in the draft, you know, we don't know. We haven't seen them play in the NBA. So what are some guys maybe in the draft that you think kind of go along that mold or are kind of similar to what you're personally looking for at the four spot next to Kat?
Okay, so if we're starting off with the draft, someone that I... Okay, so let's just look at the power forwards that are in the draft that are likely top 20-ish picks. So, and then some of them might be a little bit later, but... So we got Onyeka Okongwu, who could be a 4 or 5, Obi Toppin, Denny Avdija, who on this team, as we talked about earlier, I believe he would be a 4. Yep.
Yep, bingo.
Patrick Williams, who we went deep into, would be a 4, maybe even a small ball 5. And then Sadiq Bey, who I think also on this team would be a 4, not a 3. And then two other guys, Paul Reed and Precious Achiuwa, are another two guys that I came up with that possibly could be power forwards. Is there anybody I'm missing that you could think of offhand?
No, I don't think anybody that you're missing that would play the four. I mean, unless you want to talk about Poku at the four, but that's a different story. I don't think
NBA Twitter draft darling. So
I don't think he'll be in Minnesota next year. But yeah, I think the list you laid out there was right on.
If we're talking immediately about the mold of who I personally would want playing next to Kat, I'm throwing Onyeka Okongwu and Obi Toppin out the door. Okay. If you could combine those two players, it'd be the perfect. It would be the perfect player. But unfortunately, they're two separate players. So right. Okongwu just lacks shooting, but I do love his defensive capabilities to the point where I would like Okongwu on this team. But I don't think Gerson Rosas would. I could deal with Okongwu not being able to shoot.
I agree.
He's young. He has the room to develop a jump shot to the point where he possibly could a few years down the road. So I'm not out on Okongwu, but I am completely out on Obi Toppin.
I am too.
He cannot defend a lick, and I just... If we want Kat... I tweeted this the other day, but if we want Kat to be even average defensively, he's going to need a good defender next to him. And Obi Toppin, even if he's not as bad as people think he is, he's still not going to be good enough to elevate Kat defensively to the point where we want Kat to be.
Yeah, he's absolutely as bad as people think he is. I mean, he looks like how I would look out there if I were playing defense, and I'm 6'3", 225.
Right.
I'm nowhere near his size. But, I mean, I just have no low center of gravity at all. I'm very slow laterally. I just like to try and block everything, and I don't guard point guards or anybody smaller than me. So that's just kind of like what Obi Toppin does. But, I mean, if you're asking me, I think that, I'm out on Obi too. I feel differently about Okongwu just because I think that he's such a special defensive talent that I think he would be a really interesting guy to just say, let's draft talent and make it work. And it would force the Timberwolves to switch what they're doing defensively anyways, which I would be a fan of because I don't like the fact that they continually have Kat in a drop scheme.
Yeah, I hate the drop scheme too.
Especially because
it doesn't work. You know, it was good to try it, but it's been tried in a large sample size, and I don't think it's going to work.
Yeah, I mean, it really worked well in Portland, and I think it'd be more interesting to try it now that we have D'Angelo Russell, and we have probably a somewhat upgrade on the wing at defense over Andrew Wiggins and Malik Beasley, which isn't saying much. But
no.
I mean, then you throw J.O. out there with a guy like Okongwu or a defensively minded four, I think that your drop scheme would be a little bit different.
It'd be more effective for sure.
Yeah, but again, is it effective enough? I don't know. But I also think this team is kind of on the path to let's have a top five offense and a 20-ish defense.
Right.
But yeah, another guy that I really like in the draft that you mentioned earlier on that list was Paul Reed from DePaul.
And you could definitely get him 16 or 15 or whatever the Brooklyn pick ends up being.
Yep.
You know, he's not somebody you got to spend our top pick on.
Yeah, I think he'll for sure be around at 16 or 15, hopefully 15. And who knows? Could potentially even be around at 33 when the time rolls around there. But
he's been on big boards anywhere from 15th, 20th to 40th. So he's kind of all over the board for people.
Yeah, and I don't think anybody has any clue what's going to happen outside of the top 10. I think we all kind of have an idea of what guys might go top 10, but after that, I think it's going to be nuts.
I think so, too. It's going to be, it's very interesting.
But the note I was going to make about Paul Reed is that Paul Reed is just so all over the place on defense. He's really, really quick laterally, and he can defend 1 through 5. He's got a 7'2" wingspan. And you know, for a guy that can move that well at 6'10", 6'9", 6'10", with a 7'2" wingspan and fly up and block shots at the rim, kind of in more of like a Patrick Williams mold where, you know, he's probably not going to be a really great post defender, but every once in a while, I think, you know, could be on the back of some guy that's a lot bigger than him and hold his own pretty well. But I think his defensive versatility to fly around, kind of play more of a free safety role where he can read the defense and kind of play all over the floor would be really interesting to see him next to a guy like Kat, just because he's a guy that's so long and so good at timing when to try and break plays up, whether it be digging and pick and roll or, you know, pre-rotating on the backside and kind of laying in the weeds, if you will. And then rotating off the backside when guys drive to the rim, he just destroys balls at the rim, which is just so fun to watch. And I think he's really developed as a shooter. I think that his shooting still has a little ways to go in terms of being a consistent shooter from the outside at the NBA level. Just because, you know, he only shot 34% in unguarded catch and shoot situations, which is the majority of three pointers that he took. And again, only shot 30% from three as a whole. But I do think that the kind of foundation is there for him to grow as a shooter. But even then, I still think that his ability to kind of play make and put the ball on the deck and get to the rim would be really interesting. That kind of fits along with your idea of having that guy at the four spot be able to create a little bit, too.
And you mentioned his shooting, and it wasn't great, but I mean, still 30%, almost 2 attempts a game as a junior. So that's another knock on him. He will be like 21 and a half years old when the next season starts. So he's not young. But, you know, it shows his willingness to take a three. He has obviously enough touch to make them at an okay rate to where you can't just totally disregard him. So if that develops a little bit more. But yeah, I just love his versatility defensively. And I mean, he scored 15 points, had 10 rebounds, so he obviously can rebound. He can obviously score the ball if he needs to. But on this Timberwolves team, he's really probably not going to need to. And Paul Reed's a guy that I didn't know much about Paul Reed until I was preparing for this episode. Because I was looking more at that lottery area before I really deep dive down. And Paul Reed's a guy that I really like. And if I were to do a big board, which I'm not sure if I'm going to, Paul Reed would be decently high. I'm not saying lottery, but he would be pretty high on my big board, I think. Especially for the Timberwolves.
Yeah, I'm kind of in the process of doing that, kind of working through one of my own. And I've got through, I think I'm really solid on the first, on the top 8 or 9 guys. And then after that, it's kind of all over the place. And Paul Reed's kind of one of the guys I'm jockeying for to kind of be one of those last guys in the lottery. And I just think that he would be so fun to watch just because he's really athletic. He averaged, you know, 2.6 blocks and 1.9 steals in you know, in 31 minutes played for DePaul per game for DePaul this year. Uh-huh. And so that just shows that, you know, he can really defend at the rim, but he's also really good in passing lanes, and that's kind of what you're looking for. And especially if Kat's going to keep playing the five, which is another thing we can talk about, but
yep.
But having a guy like Paul Reed that can rotate off the backside and swat shots off the backboard would be a really nice safety valve for Kat. But the downside of Paul Reed is, you know, I just don't know if he's polished enough offensively to start right away next to Kat.
Right.
But hopefully he could. I mean, who knows?
Yeah, so you mentioned Kat playing the five. Let's dive into that a little bit, because something I want to talk about. So what are your views on that? What are your views on Kat being a five? Does Kat have to be the five on this Timberwolves team?
So as it relates to how Gerst thinks, yes, he has to be the five.
Right.
But if you're asking me what do you think? For what do I think? I don't think he has to be the five at all. And the reason why I say that is because I think that Kat is arguably a better perimeter defender in terms of being able to move his feet and keep guys in front of him and turn ball handlers.
Okay.
I think he's better at that than he is at defending the rim, which is saying something for a guy that's 7 feet tall. And and I really think that you got to play to a guy's strengths. I understand the fact that you want to develop his interior defense, as do I. But I don't think that you can just say, you know what, we're not going to use any of the strengths that you do have defensively and just totally hone in on you, you know, being this drop big that defends shots at the rim and makes life harder for defenses. I think, you know, I also don't like the whole idea of, you know, four out, one in, or playing a five out offense essentially without having two bigs. I think that especially if you're going to be a team that's going to be a perennial playoff team, you've got to be able to play multiple, you know, play multiple on offense in the sense that you've got to be able to play with two bigs, because some lineups are going to when you're playing defense, some lineups are going to have two bigs to defend the other team's two bigs on offense, especially in the Western Conference. And I really hope that they try Kat at the four a little bit, maybe throw him out there with Naz Reid, you know, in a game that is a blowout, or try doing it in a preseason game, or maybe if they all play in this delete eight, just try doing different things with him defensively to see what works. Because if they're able to do that and then, you know, draft a guy, whether it's at 16 or maybe in the second round or in an undrafted free agent spot, I think you could really play Kat with a more traditional five, just because he's so dynamic on the perimeter on offense, to a point where you're not losing a ton if you have a guy that, you know, that isn't as much of a perimeter player as Kat. So, but yeah, do you kind of feel the same way, or do you think see him as more of a traditional five?
I'm not quite as switch Kat to a four as some people are, but I'm not against it. I would have to see it more because we've barely seen it, you know.
But you're in favor of potentially trying it to see what it looks like.
I would 100% throw him out there next to, I don't know. I mean, we rarely saw him next to Gorgui Dieng, who is a good rim defender. Why didn't we see that, you know? So I would like to see him run at some four and see what we have there. But I'm not going to formulate an opinion because I don't know. There's been some evidence of him being able to move his feet well out on the perimeter and stuff, so I think that would be interesting. But I'd have to see more of it. I'm not gonna say, but yeah, I would like to see it, and I think a lot of people would, but Gerson Rosas would not. And that's another thing that I have to question a little bit. Do you think Gerson Rosas, one big, and then four people that are not bigs? Do you think that means like point guard, shooting guard, two small forwards? Because I think it might mean point guard, shooting guard, small forward, or like point guard, shooting guard, small forward, and just like really small outside of Kat. I mean, a decently big three, you know, like a 6'9" three, not like Malik, not like Jarrett Culver running the three, but more like a Sadiq Bey running the three, and then you have Malik, D'Angelo Russell, and I don't know, another point guard out there, Jordan McLaughlin or something.
Yeah, I definitely don't like that he's so married to that idea, but I definitely think that those first four players, I think you could have two point guards, because I think we saw J-Mac and D-Lo play together last year, which was or this year, I should say. God,
it's been a long year,
which was phenomenal. I loved it. It was great, and it was probably the best two-man lineup the Timberwolves had all season. But
very small sample size.
But yeah, but I agree. I don't know. I mean, it was a small sample size, but yeah. I think it was It was a big enough sample size for me to a point where I say, all right, we got to see more of that next year.
You definitely need to take. You can't just throw it out where it's like, oh, you know, small sample size doesn't matter. It definitely matters because of how effective it was, and it was a large enough sample size to mean something.
Yeah, but again, like, not a large enough sample size to be like, all right, this is what we have to do for X amount of minutes every game.
Large enough to try it out again.
Yeah, for sure. And the other thing that I want to mention that I agree with you completely on is the fact that you said that it just could be really anybody. It doesn't have to be, you know, a point guard, a shooting guard, a small forward, a power forward. I think it could be really any combination of those four positions out there. I mean, obviously you need like a lead guard out there but, you know, I don't think that that's going to be Jarrett Culver this year. I think they tried that and they really only did that because, you know, they didn't really have any other options until, you know, Jordan McLaughlin really asserted himself.
Right.
But yeah, I don't think that it's going to be traditional by any sense.
Right.
So.
All right. What is there any other? Let me look in my list here. Other draft people. We talked about Patrick Williams in depth. A couple episodes ago, so we don't need to get too in-depth, but I think Williams would be good. His knock, again, would be the shooting and offensive consistency and everything. Anything else you want to touch on with Patrick Williams there?
I think Patrick Williams, just, you know, like we touched on a couple weeks ago, was that I think he really does have some intriguing secondary playmaking skills, especially in the pick and roll.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that using him as a point forward would be really interesting to see. But yeah, I mean, other than that, I think we've kind of touched on it and you kind of just alluded to it.
Okay. So we talked about Paul Reed, touched on, Patrick Williams. Sadiq Bey is another person, traditionally probably a three in the NBA, but he's got the size. He's like 6'3" or 6'8", excuse me. And he's not like a small player by any means. He's 215. So he has a little bit to him, but he's not like a massive dude, but he definitely could guard fours. What do you think is about Sadiq Bey? He looks to be a quality defender and a great shooter, which would fit some of the stuff, but I don't know offensive creation wise outside of that what we really have from Sadiq.
Yeah, you know, I think Sadiq is one of those guys that's, you know, kind of seen as what I like to call a synergy superstar.
Uh-huh.
In the sense that he all of his metrics are really crazy good in synergy, especially on offense. But I really question his ability, at least at the NBA level, to put the ball on the deck and create, which I think lowers his ceiling as a three and probably moves him more to the four, just because, you know, he's not going to blow by anybody. But I do think it would be interesting if he got a matchup against a smaller two or three. He's really, really good at using his, throwing his weight around and using, his size to really get into the chest of defenders and kind of create leverage that creates open space for him to finish around the rim. So that would be interesting. But if he's matched up against a guy that's his size or larger, I think he'd really struggle to create off the dribble, which I think lowers his overall upside in my mind. But if he can shoot the ball the way he shot the ball in college, I mean, he is going to have a place in the NBA. He's 98th percentile in all catch and shoot, shooting 48% or pretty much 49% from the floor as a whole.
Yeah.
And an effective field goal percentage of 72.5%, which is absolutely out of this world.
What did he shoot from three? 45% from three, which
Which is crazy.
That's as a sophomore. But another knock on him, as I mentioned earlier, is he's also 21 years old. And some of the bigger name people that know a lot more about draft stuff than you and I do, they think he might be who he is already, and he's not really going to develop a whole lot more, you know, especially like athletically. So I think that's something to be aware of. But He intrigues me. I used to be a lot higher on him than I am now. He used to be my favorite person to pick at 16, but now it's definitely...
Williams?
Yeah, Patrick Williams.
I agree.
So another power forward option we talked about was Denny Avdija. What do you think of Denny as R4?
So I really was down on Denny before the hiatus, just because I was really worried about kind of the posture of while he was shooting. It just looked like he was uncomfortable while he shot, and I didn't like the long-term viability of it, or didn't think much of it. But he really seems to have reworked his jump shot, and it looks a lot more fluid now. And he shot the ball extremely well since being back, since the EuroLeague has come back.
Well.
Really, really well. I think it's been north of 40%. And I really like his ability to get out and transition and run and play make, especially when they got numbers. And if he can still be the great slashing and finishing guy that he is at 6'8", 6'9", I think he could be really good. I really do. I think he's really quick laterally, which would be a really nice weapon to have defensively, especially if you're 6'9", probably has close to a 7-foot wingspan.
Do you think he has the size to guard fives consistently if we ask to switch onto them?
Or the skill
to do it? I mean, he would probably have the size, but...
I mean, he's 220 pounds, and I think that getting him in an NBA strength and conditioning program would be interesting to see what a team would want to do with him. But I don't know. I haven't seen enough of him getting switched on to big guys to really tell you for sure. I think that he probably could.
He's definitely built,
because he's
though,
long.
Like,
yeah, and he's...
Like Luka came into the league, and he was kind of, like, chubby.
Yeah.
Like, Avdija's, like, every pound on him is more muscle than it is, like, fat. So
right.
If he can build on that, I think he would have an okay time. But
I don't know. Yeah, I don't think he's going to get exploited on defense by a guy that's way bigger than him. But I I'm not going to sit here and say, like, I know exactly what's going to happen to him.
But again, it comes back to the point where if you want to elevate Cat, you need to put a really solid defender next to him.
Yeah, and I think Denny can be a really, really solid defender at the NBA level.
Exactly. Because
he's already been a solid defender at the EuroLeague, which is the next best thing. So.
Yeah. Yeah, I like Denny there. He's one of my five or six favorites to come in as the power forward for the Timberwolves.
What just to keep it on Denny for a sec, what's kind of the context of how you'd take Denny? Like, would you take who would need to be off the board for you to consider Denny?
What pick do you think we have? Like,
that's another thing that factors into
because
it.
Because I'm not taking Denny top three or probably not even top four.
I think it would have to be either.
I think it would be like sixth, and Devin Vassell is already off the board, and then I would take him.
Yeah, my thing too is like you'd have to not have Killian Hayes would have to be gone. I think the three guys that would for sure have to be gone would be Killian, Devin Vassell, and Anthony Edwards. And if those three guys are gone and you're at like 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, or not 8, but 4, 5, 6, 7, I would totally consider taking him. I think he's going to be really, really solid. I think he's got one of the higher floors of any player in the draft.
I think LaMelo Ball would have to be gone too. I know, no. Don't get me wrong. I'm not that high in LaMelo Ball, especially for the Timberwolves.
You're just kind of thinking that's what they might do.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I think he would have to be gone. Because if LaMelo Ball falls to five,
there's
a crucifixion. But I don't think he's going to fall past three. You know, three, I think,
I think he's going to go first.
But there's other people, too, like James Wiseman. I could see, James Wise is another interesting person if you wanted to put him at the five and run Cat at the four. Some people interested in that. But I'm ready for the part of the NBA draft where the camera turns on to James Wiseman sitting in his house and it's like pick number 14 and people are like, Why is James Wiseman still on the board? And it's gonna be like, because people don't think he's good. You know, that happened with Bol Bol and other people. And if there's one guy they think they're gonna be like, why isn't he taken yet? I think it's James Wiseman.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Timberwolves front office really understands player value. And don't get me wrong, as much as I love NBA Draft Twitter, I don't think that NBA Draft Twitter really thinks like executives do in the sense that you know, I think executives are way higher on James Wiseman than most people on, you know, that are, you know, and all those people do a great job watching film and breaking things down, and I don't necessarily disagree with them with having, you know, Wiseman a little bit, being a little bit lower on Wiseman, but like ranking Wiseman lower than 12 or 13, I just don't get it. I would be absolutely shocked if James Wiseman is not a top 6 or 7 pick or 7 or 8
pick. I think he probably will be, but there's just that small part of me that can see him being the, if you go to like a football reference, like Johnny Manziel was like the next big thing, and it took however long for Johnny to come off the board. I could see that happening with Wiseman, but I highly doubt it would. But he's like a guy that I could see where they're just, none of those other people are going to fall. Like, I could see Wiseman doing it. I'm not, I can see Ball falling out of the top 5 or 6.
If you had to kind of like nominate a candidate for that to happen to, I think that that's probably the best
and
one.
And mostly
to
due do. To his small sample size. I think if he played a full year in college, he would probably be a solidified top 3 selection. But also, I don't know. I haven't watched a lot on James Wiseman just because there's not a lot on James Wiseman. And that's what's scary. I think that's what's scaring a lot of NBA draft Twitter as well.
Yeah, I saw a ton of him play in high school just because of my job. Yeah. But yeah, I think he's going to, I mean, he has maybe the best physical profile of anybody in the draft.
Oh, for sure.
And I mean, it's crazy.
Him or Anthony Edwards.
I mean,
Edwards' physical
profile
is really
good, 7'6" wingspan is nuts. Mm-hmm. And he's athletic as hell, too.
Yep. So it's not like he's, you know, lanky and still growing into his body. I think he's pretty well grown into that body. So I would say him or Anthony Edwards probably have the best, like, you know, physical profile. Because Anthony Edwards is built.
No,
he's ready to come in and play shooting guard or something.
That was the other guy that
NBA.
I was going
to
say you can make an argument for. But I think Wiseman's going to be an all-star. I really do. But that's that can be a conversation maybe for a different time, I guess.
Yeah. So, are we done with Avdija?
Yeah, I love his prospects as a 4 in Minnesota.
Yep, and we're not talking about Toppin anymore. I'm never talking.
I get so irrationally frustrated when I see like CBS Sports having us draft Toppin at like seven, but at 2.
It was at 2.
It's just like
I said, the only way I'm taking Toppin is if he falls to the Brooklyn pick.
Even then, I wouldn't take him.
I think I would just because then I'm just like, okay, you're going to be our backup 4 and you're just going to score buckets. Like, that's why I would take him. I do not want to take him before that pick. If he's there, unless like Devin Vassell was there or something, I would take Toppin there just due to his offensive versatility. But I've been down on Toppin. Okay, so before I really started looking into draft stuff and Toppin was having a great college basketball season, I wasn't watching him at all. And I talked about this in our group chat the other day, too, but you look at Obi Toppin, and you're like, I bet this guy's just a great defender. He's huge. I bet he can just take on 4s and 5s.
Yeah.
And then you watch him try and move, and
it's like a dude on stilts.
He just looks like a beast, but he's defensively, he's not.
No,
and
yeah,
it's so
really
surprising.
It's tough. Yeah, one of my...
And
one
a
of,
lot
one
of my... it has to do with his lower body. That's basically what it all boils down to with him.
He's really top-heavy. Yeah. No, and, yeah, he's really fun offensively. I watched a lot of Dayton games just because they played an interesting number of kind of like late Thursday night, early Saturday morning games.
Yeah. Where you had time to watch
I had time to watch him. Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
And I had a couple friends, too, that were playing in the A-10 from high school. So watched those games, too. And he was so much fun to watch offensively, but... Yeah, I can't see him here.
You know that one play, though, where he's like, you're going to know the one I'm talking about, where he just run down the floor and then step inside the free throw line, between the legs, dunk? Like,
yeah,
who
that
does
was,
that?
I was watching that live. That was nuts. That was
who does that? But yeah,
that
that's enough topic. I'm done with him. Okay, so I think we're done with draft people now.
Yeah, the two other guys that I want to mention to keep an eye out for are Tyler Bay and Precious Achiuwa. Don't think that Achiuwa is obviously a guy that'd only be, you'd only think about at 16. Really athletic, could be a really nice kind of dunker spot, and more of a defensively minded guy.
And a good rebounder too, averaged almost 11 rebounds, 16
great
points
rebounder
at college. And he showed flashes of shooting too. He shot 32.5% on, I mean, only 1.3 attempts per game, but
his form is not
bad
at all. His form is not bad at all.
Yeah, and he's got the body for it. He's 6'9", 225, 7.2 or 7 foot 2 inch wingspan. Like, he's got the size to play and then guard some five. So
yeah, like if you want to bet
he could
on
be
a
around at. You think he could be around at 33?
No, I think he's got too good of a physical profile, and
he'll go between 16 and 33.
Yeah, I think he's just his potential is too high for him to go. I could see him going like 12 or 13. I could see him not even being there. Because again, it's thinking more like how NBA executives might think rather than rather than how a draft Twitter guy would think.
Because draft Twitter would take Poku fifth,
right? Which is like I'm so here for it, just as like a fan, but
I'm interested.
Probably not going to happen. Yeah, and then the other guy I want to mention that's an option at 16 or 33. If we got him at 33, I'd be over the moon. Is Tyler Bay from Colorado?
Yep.
Probably one of the best.
Playing next to McKinley Wright, right?
Yep. Former Champlin Park standout. If we get him at 33, he would instantly be the second best wing defender on the team behind Josh Okogie. And he might even be better than Josh in the sense that he's just so good as an off-ball defender. He's so, so good and so disruptive. And shot over 40% from three, albeit it was a small sample size. But if he can even shoot like 35% at the NBA level, he's going to be a really solid, you know, defensive guy with that can just be competent offensively. I think he'll be in the league for a long, long time. Another one of those guys that's a little bit older. You know, he's 22. He'll be probably close to, you know,
probably almost 23 when he comes in the league.
Right, but again, he's a guy that is definitely going to be able to step in and play, especially on defense right away.
Yep. And so, again, he shot, I don't know if you mentioned this, but he shot 42% on one attempt. Obviously, again, super small sample size, but it's something. And that's and always, you know.
And he shot 74% from the free throw line, so you never know when, you know, when a guy's competent free throw shooter, chances are you've got a better opportunity there to grow with that.
And Cat wasn't shooting threes in college, and now he could possibly be the best shooting big man of all time. Three-point shooting.
It's crazy how fast guys can develop if you know they're in the right spot. So,
all right. So I want to touch on a couple of the power forward options on the Timberwolves right now. I forgot to mention this when we were talking about Denny Avdia. Are you scared that he's just Juancho Hernan Gomez?
No,
with
not at
a
all.
Little bit better handle.
Very, no. Very different player.
I agree, but you know the physical profile's there and everything. So
yeah, he's much more athletic than Juancho is.
I think his floor would be Juancho Hernan Gomez's ceiling, maybe a little bit.
I think his floor is higher. I think his floor is even higher than that.
Yeah, but you know. And it probably comes from being the European thing, and there's a stigma about like European players all playing the same style and everything.
Yeah.
But so there's some power forward options on the Timberwolves. Juancho Hernan Gomez, he's going to be a restricted free agent, so the Timberwolves can bring him back. I think he fits decently, but I think he lacks the post defense that we could really use next to Cat. He's used in the right place, but I don't think he's the best option as a post defender.
Not at all, no.
Another person, James Johnson. He's a quality team defender, but he's only 6'7". Not really a difference maker at the rim. But he's going to be around because he's going to accept his player option. He's not going to turn down $16 million because he's not going to get anything close to that.
Yep.
Do you think there's any chance James Johnson's the starting power forward next season?
I think there's a higher chance that James Johnson is the starting power forward than Juancho.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
I would give Juancho like a 10% chance, and I'd give James Johnson like a 20% chance.
I like Juancho off the bench more, I think.
So do I. But again,
but what price do you pay for a bench power forward when you can get somebody that does what he does probably cheaper? You know?
Yeah, well, I also don't think the market for Juancho is going to be very high, but
I don't think the market's going to be high for anyone just due to the fact that, you know, a lot of things are going on. Cap space is going to be down, so that will help the Timberwolves out.
Yeah, and only like four or five teams really have cap space to begin with, and a lot of those teams already have, you know, they already have fours. I mean, you look at Charlotte's got PJ Washington. You look at the Knicks have every power forward under the sun. And then you look at a team like Detroit, and Detroit already has Christian Wood and Blake Griffin. So, so I just struggle to, and you know, maybe there's a playoff team that wants him for shooting, and they use their biannual exception on him, which is going to be no more than $4 million and change. But again, I'd see a team using that on a better two-way player rather than just a one, you know, really only a one-dimensional player. So
watch him end up in Houston to play small ball backup center for them.
Oh, I don't think, I don't think he's good enough to play, you know, defense as a small ball five.
And that, but that's another reason. His shooting is interesting, though.
Oh, for sure.
You know, I would love to have him come off the bench just as, you know, continue the potent shooting when the bench unit comes in.
Yeah, I think if the Timberwolves signed a different backup center, which I am also in favor of, just for a year or two.
I think I know who you're talking about.
I think you could make a better argument for keeping Wancho and playing him off the bench.
Yep. All right, so then Omari Spellman's another guy. He is very interesting, and I don't know that if either the Wolves don't want him here or he doesn't want to be here. I don't know, but it's very odd to me that he never got a chance, even with our depleted front court last season or this season.
Yeah, and there were different rumors going on about that where I think it was a little something different than where I think it might have been a case of an I don't really want to be here type deal.
Right.
So,
but and then Jared Vanderbilt's the last person on the roster currently that I'm interested in. I've talked about him a lot. I like Jared Vanderbilt, and I hope he develops into what he could be, because he could turn into a mold of what we need if he can start shooting a little bit better. But, you know, he's 6'9". He has the size to defend the rim. He's athletic. What do you think, Jared? You think Jared Vanderbilt, any chance he's back and actually has a role on this team next year?
Yeah, I really think he does. I don't know how much he plays with the NBA team, but he's going to play a full season in Iowa, and I hope that he stays healthy. You know, Dave Dufour and Danny LaRue and Seth Partnow have been doing an awesome series on The Athletic about how they would run teams that are in the Delete Eight. And Dave Dufour made a really good point, saying that he kind of said that a fully realized version of Vanderbilt would be, you know, his kind of pipe dream for a front court partner next to Cat, and I couldn't agree more.
Do you think he could, if he reached his full potential, do you think he would turn into Pascal Siakam?
I think he could turn into a light version of it. You know, I don't think he's ever going to shoot as well as Pascal, but
right.
But I definitely could see Jared Vanderbilt, you know, being a guy that can be a secondary initiator, that can really have a good time getting to the rim and getting to the free throw line off the dribble from the perimeter, especially if he's matched up against a guy that's his size. But, yeah, I mean, he was a really, really good player in high school that was always ranked in the top 10 or top 15 in his class in high school and played really, really well in international competitions with Team USA, and it's just unfortunate that he's been so injured.
Yeah.
But, I think if, you know, again, it's another great guy to bet on. To keep on your team and keep team control of. So if he does kind of realize that full potential, then you kind of have a really, really positive asset on your hands.
Yeah, for sure. So, okay, we're done with people on the team. Now we look to free agents. I'm going to name the top, like, big man free agents that are out there, mostly power forwards, but some of them you could consider centers as well. So Anthony Davis has a player option. Obviously, we're not getting Anthony Davis. There is an article about that if you want to read it somewhere. I'm not going to mention where. But Anthony Davis is a free agent, but he likely will accept his player option. Then we got Montrezl Harrell, Serge Ibaka, Danilo Gallinari. Jeremy Grant also has a player option for about $9 million.
But he has already pretty much announced that he's going to decline that player option.
Right, exactly. And then Paul Millsap. So we're throwing Anthony Davis out because absolutely no way that the Timberwolves would get Anthony Davis. Montrezl Harrell interests me. He's going to cost too much for us to afford him, so I'm going to throw him out as well. Danilo Gallinari, probably over our price point as well, especially if we want to keep Malik Beasley. So for me, it leaves Grant, Millsap, and Serge Ibaka. And Serge likely would be a five for this team.
Yeah, I could see that kind of just being a fluid thing where Serge isn't really a four, isn't really a five. Him and Kat just kind of play,
run out there. Yeah, and I would love it. I know you're kind of high on Serge, right?
Yeah, I'm really high on Serge. I think Serge is probably my favorite option that the Timberwolves could bring in at the four or five spot, just because he's so rock solid and steady. If you go look at his basketball reference profile, I mean, he's pretty much put up the same numbers, which are consistently great, for you know, the last 3 or 4 years. And yep. he's a guy that is so rock solid, steady Eddie on defense, both defending the rim, and he can step out, and he's athletic enough, you know, even at more of an advanced age, even at 30, to be able to step out and defend guys on the perimeter too. You know, he's not going to switch on to twos really, but he can switch on to threes and fours and switch up to fives and have zero issue. You know, and the other thing too is the last, you know, he shot at least, you know, 30 outside of a one down season last year in Toronto. I mean, these are the last 5 years, he's shot, you know, 39, 36, and then 29, and then back up to 40% this year. Mm-hmm. And that's with at least shooting at least, you know, 4 shots a game every year, which is awesome. And at least 3 shots a game every year, excuse me. Yep. And you know, I just love his ability to stretch the floor. He never tries to do too much. He never takes a bad shot. He always plays within the flow of the offense. He's a great veteran leader that I think would be really important to have in the locker room, especially if you lost a guy like Malik Beasley, or lost a guy like James Johnson, who I think a lot of the guys in the locker room gel with. It's just there's so many positives and so few negatives about him. I mean, the only negative is that he might be too much money to a point where you wouldn't have Malik Beasley on your team.
Right.
And to be brutally honest with you, I'd almost rather have Serge Ibaka than Malik Beasley, but that's neither here nor there. I just love his you know, his fit in Minnesota.
Yeah, and I'm with you on that. I'm not quite on there.
With the Malik Beasley
over
thing?
Malik Beasley.
Yeah.
But I get what you're saying. And I didn't know Serge was your favorite option. I thought Jeremy Grant would be your favorite option. And maybe that's just because you wrote that in-depth article that I love, by the way. But Jeremy Grant's the next guy I want to talk about a little bit. Obviously, he can shoot the ball. Versatile defensively. He's someone that can guard... You think he can guard ones? He can guard threes,
Jeremy
twos.
Grant?
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. I think he can guard ones. Yeah.
Okay. I know for sure, like, twos, threes, fours, switch on to fives. So if he can switch on to ones, too, like, there's your versatile defender that you need. Can also knock down shots. Obviously, not much of an offensive creator.
Yeah,
more
that's
of a
the only
catch-and-shoot guy. So what else did you notice about Jeremy Grant? Because you wrote a very in-depth piece about him.
Yeah, so the things that I've noticed about Jeremy Grant is, outside of what you've already mentioned, was that he also is very good at attacking closeouts. You know, he's not a guy where he's got a ton of shooting gravity in the sense that he's going to totally bring the defense out to him.
Right.
But he's very competent at knocking down wide open jump shots. And when defenders do step out, he's so athletic and his strides cover so much ground that he only has to take, you know, one dribble after a shot fake to get to the rim and dunk over somebody or finish through somebody or draw a foul. And then on defense too, just... He was really, really good at defending the rim when Steven Adams got, you know, kind of isolated and brought away from the basket and in side pick and rolls and in high ball screens too. And even when they had to ice and Steven Adams didn't correctly get out to, you know, the out of bounds line there on the sideline.
Yep.
And Jeremy Grant was left all alone at the rim to try and clean up the mess. He did such a good job of that and did such a good job, too, cleaning up, you know, on the backside, swatting shots at the rim when guys would cut and be open, seemingly open underneath the basket. He's so good at covering ground on defense and making his presence felt off the ball. And don't get me wrong, he's a good on-the-ball defender, too, but his presence is where he makes himself, you know, felt. Is off the ball on defense. And
I think that's important next to Cat when you have Cat who can tend to get lost on defense.
Yeah, and next to Josh Okogie, too, who's more of an on-the-ball guy.
And
Josh is good off the ball, too, don't get me wrong, but I think this team is more in need of, like, the Robert Covington type that's really good off the ball and kind of seeing the whole floor and kind of being the quarterback of the defense.
And I think Jared Culver actually kind of... I saw a lot of flashes of Culver playing really good off-ball defense.
Yep.
Like, some of those, you know, those steals where you're like, how did Robert Covington get this? I saw some of those from Culver. So if you got a Okogie who's good on the ball, if you had Grant and Culver there to cover up mistakes, and then with Cat down low, it could turn out to be good. And I think that Grant could elevate Cat's defense to a level where it's slightly below average, maybe slightly above, depending how much Cat would buy into it.
Yeah, and you're looking at even a year or 2 years from now, I think Jared Culver is going to be a really, really good NBA defender if he can bulk up a little bit. And for a guy that supposedly lives in the gym and lives in the weight room, I have no doubt that he can get his body to a point physically where he can guard anybody he needs to guard. And then you throw a guy like Jeremy Grant next to two of those guys potentially. I mean, God hope that both of those guys' offensive games can come around.
Right.
You'd have a really, really interesting five with D'Lo and Cat, and then having Malik Beasley come off the bench. However long down the line, maybe 2 years down the line, but yeah, Jeremy Grant would be awesome. And you know, he's a guy too that, like you said, doesn't really offer that much off the bounce in terms of offensive playmaking, but like I said, is more than capable of attacking a closeout and putting pressure on the D and just making simple drop off passes to bigs in the lane, like Steven Adams. He did that with Steven Adams all the time in OKC, and could do the same thing with Cat here in Minnesota.
Yeah, he's the type of player where he doesn't really make bad passes. He just makes the passes he knows he can make, and then he's not gonna, you know, try and be someone who's he's not, which is important for the Timberwolves team as well. So yeah, I really like Jeremy Grant. He would probably be my ideal four that is realistic, because you're looking at
a price range. He's definitely more realistic than Ibaka.
You know, do you think you'd have to pay more than you think he would get him on like a mid-level exception? Like you could throw him the whole MLE and he's there.
Yeah, I'm actually somebody, I know I might be in the minority here, but I really truly think that Jeremy Grant is not going to get anything more than the mid-level exception. And again, it goes back to the same point I made with look at the teams who have cap space, and then look at how their rosters are built.
The Hawks have cap space, John Collins. Then there's the Pistons, Christian Wood, Blake Griffin, like you mentioned. There's just
Well, and the Hawks, too, have DeAndre Hunter, who I think would be somewhat similar to Jeremy Grant, too, where it's just where do guys fit in? So I completely agree with you on that. And because of that, I think he's going to be a guy that, you know, and he's probably not going to be able to play for a contender, because most of the contending teams have multiple stars, you know, two, sometimes three, max contracts, where they don't have the luxury of just being able to go get one guy in a full mid-level. They have to, a lot of times they'll have to split up their mid-level, and especially those contending teams have the taxpayer mid-level exception, which is much lower than, I think it's closer to like 6.5 or 7, rather than the full taxpayer, which is like 9.75 mil this year. So, or the full non-taxpayer, which is 9.75 this year.
So, do we have the non-tax, or do we have the tax? Because we're technically in the tax.
Yeah. So that'll depend. I think ultimately the team will try and
make a corresponding move or
figure something out to be able to do it, but.
Does that account for if you're in the tax for the 2019-20 season or the upcoming season?
Well, I think it's treated as...
The season prior,
if you were in the tax.
Because I suppose your contracts and stuff aren't finalized.
Yeah,
right,
exactly. Yeah. So I'll look it up quick, but keep going.
So say Grant ends up with that 9-point-something million-dollar contract, MLE, what's the point of him taking that versus accepting his $9.3 million option in Denver? I mean, it's the same contract, essentially. Is it just fit? What? You think he's the type of player that just doesn't want to be in Denver and wants more of an opportunity elsewhere?
Yeah, I think that's exactly what it is, to be honest with you, because, you know,
Do you think Michael Porter Jr. is going to take that spot? Do you think he's going to be their power forward?
Yeah, so
because
I think...
they're losing they could possibly lose Millsap. And Jeremy Grant.
You ask me who's more essential to Denver's success, whether it be Paul Millsap or Jeremy Grant, I would undoubtedly say Paul Millsap without even thinking twice about it. And the fact that they accepted a $30 million player or team option on Paul Millsap
shows they want him.
Going into his year 35 or his age 35 season shows how much they like Paul Millsap.
Do you think they re-sign him this?
I think they'll try. I mean, I don't know where else Paul Millsap would go.
I don't know what his value would be I have no idea what his... I mean, nobody's going to be looking to throw him a four-year contract worth a ton of money, because
the
guy's going to be 40
at the end
of
it. Yeah, it'd be a one or two. But I think that he'll be back in Denver, and I think Grant's the odd man out. You know, Denver did not
play... Kind of like Malik Beasley.
Right. Denver did not play very well with Grant on the floor last or this year, and he just didn't really fit next to Jokic. And I think the fact that Denver plays a much more slow, kind of grit and grind type of game, I just don't think that's Jeremy Grant's game. I think he thrives in more of an up-tempo, get up and down the court game on both ends.
Because he played a lot better in OKC, and you got Russell Westbrook running the show. Like, you're go, go, go.
The pace numbers are with OKC are much more similar to what we'd see in Minnesota, obviously.
Right.
Where Denver was, I think they were second to last in the league, just behind Charlotte in offensive pace, if I'm remembering correctly, for just this year. So we'll see what ends up happening, but I would be pretty shocked if Jeremy Grant was back in Denver, and if Jeremy Grant signed for anything more than the mid-level exception.
All right. I hope so, because if we can get him on a mid-level, he would be ideal.
Yeah, I think he would like.
I don't see any reason why he wouldn't like playing Minnesota. He'd be the starting four with not a lot of competition, really. You know, unless we drafted a guy or something. But somebody I didn't mention, and he just popped into my head, and I just had to look up if his contract. And he is an unrestricted free agent this summer, and that's Marcus Morris. He's on the Clippers now. He just got traded there. Do you think there's any shot Marcus Morris comes? He was on a $15 million contract last season. He's 30 years old. But he could fit that mold. He can shoot a little bit. Decent defender. Like, what do you think? Just very gritty, especially. Do you think that he's an option, or do you think he's going to be out of our price range?
You know, I think he had a
really good season.
Yeah, I think he'll end up being out of the price range. The reason why I say that is because I think that he'll stick somewhere with... You know, he's a veteran guy. I think
he's looking for rings, too.
I think, too, yeah. I mean, maybe he's out of the price range, maybe he's not. But the primary reason why he wouldn't come here is because I think he wants to play for a contending team.
He just doesn't want to be in Minnesota. Which,
right. I don't blame him. Yeah, I can't blame anybody.
There's no, I don't know what you want to call it, but, like, you don't look forward to having to cover up mistakes from Karl-Anthony Towns. And I think that's going to be part of a struggle. But, okay. So then, the last person, I forgot to mention, we were talking about Timberwolves. What percentage chance do you think Jake Layman's the starting four next year?
Zero.
You don't think there's any chance Jake Layman is? Because they seem to like him. They gave him a 3-year deal in the offseason.
Yeah, I mean, I love Jake Layman. I think part of the reason why they gave him a 3-year deal was because they thought that, you know, after year one or year two, Jake Layman would, you know, his value would be much higher than what they initially signed him for.
And I think it will be, because what, he'd get $3-4 million a year or something
like
that?
Yeah, I think it was 3-for-9, or 3-for-12, one of the two.
Yep.
But I just don't see him being, you know, big enough really to guard fives. Yep. And I just don't think he's a perfect fit next to Kat, just because he's much more of an offensively minded guy rather than a defensively minded guy. I think they wanted more defensively minded guy next to Kat. But I think he'll play significant minutes, especially as a slasher, really, really going to fit well with D'Angelo Russell. I think they'll play some minutes together.
Yeah.
But I don't see him being the starting four just because I
see him as like a
better player there.
I see him both 12, 15 minutes a game off the bench. Maybe, you know, some nights up to 20, depending. Do you think he's a 3 or a 4? I mean, what position do you think he plays?
I think he's more of a 3 personally, but, I could see him playing the floor 4 just because he's 6'8", 6'9".
Yeah.
And he's really athletic and tall and can get up and block shots at the rim. But again, he's pretty small. Like, he's not really that built. He's kind of more of a swingman type build. I think he'll be a really solid bench piece. And Jared Culver could be a fun kind of wing tandem off the bench.
He's not a bad defender. He's in the right place, but he's not guarding big men. Like, that's just not who he is.
I'd say he's kind of a neutral defender. He's not going to move the needle a ton.
Yeah. You know, net neutral or type of player on the floor.
Exactly.
All right. So, that's all I had for free agents. Is there any other free agents you're keeping your eye on, or maybe people that you could get via trade or anything?
In terms of, what I want is probably different than guys that, you know, will take. Two other guys that I wanted to note outside of Grant, Ibaka, and DJJ were Derek Favors is one who's got an expiring deal.
I almost wrote him down.
who's got an expiring deal down in New Orleans. I think that with Zion coming up and Jackson Hayes coming up as well, I think that he could kind of be the odd man out.
For sure.
I don't know that they'll want to pay him a lot of money, especially considering the fact that he's dealt with some injuries in recent years. And you know, too, I think he could have a somewhat decent-sized market. He's 28 now, probably 29 next season. But made, I think he signed a two-year, $28 million deal two off seasons ago, and I just don't see him. I just don't see him getting that kind of money again this year, just because he averaged 9 and 10 this year, and I just don't think that's going to be worth a ton of extra money in the open market. So he's probably a full mid-level guy, but who knows? I mean, maybe he's another guy that could want to go ring chasing, and I could definitely understand that and see that, but a guy who's really, really solid defensively, doesn't really stretch the floor or shoot threes much, but a guy, like I said, you could, or like we were talking about earlier, you could potentially slide him up at the five and have Cat play more of a four, and he's a good enough guy in terms of finding open cutters where, you know, if you put him in the high post and give him the ball, I mean, he can find an open cutter and make that pass. So that's another guy that I would watch. And then the other guy that I wanted to mention as kind of a bridge from Gorgui Dieng to Naz Reid at more of a backup five spot that, who knows, you could play a Twin Towers lineup that would be a lot of fun, is Myers Leonard. He's one of my favorite players just like to follow. I think he's just such a funny, fun-loving dude.
He's a unique character.
Right.
You know.
Who I think can fit in anywhere. He's 7 foot. He's got a 7'3" wingspan. He's 260 pounds. He can defend the rim pretty well. And this year he has a defensive player impact plus minus of 1.49, which is awesome. And he's really good away from the rim too, kind of like Kat. Really, really good at moving his feet. But can, you know, defend the rim really well as a rotating team defender, and can block shots at the rim as well. And more importantly, he was in the 74th percentile, excuse me, as a pick and roll big defender, which I think is going to be really crucial, especially if you've got a guy like D'Angelo Russell as your point of attack defender. Having a guy that runs the floor really well in transition, but also 91st percentile in overall offense and 70th percentile in spot ups. And then the last number I'll throw at you, he was 88th percentile in threes. So, and also a guy
you're talking about 39% career three-point shooter, 43% this past season, 2.5 attempts a game. So definitely not a fluke. He can shoot the ball.
He's not a post-up guy in offense at all either, which I think is
that's
a
not
good
what this
fit.
Offense is about.
Exactly.
You know,
right. Which is exactly. I think he's a good fit offensively, and 98th percentile around the basket in non-post-up scenarios. So he's a really good cutter in terms of flashing to help guys that are stuck on the wing. Helping them out and just kind of making himself available as a big target down low, and being able to finish at the rim through contact. So he'd be a really fun guy to have as a backup five that you could play comfortably, I think, next to Kat and just run a ton of pick and rolls. He could be a really good guy that can, you know, dive in a dunker spot or can pick out or can pop out after setting a screen while also playing Kat out there comfortably. So really, really interesting option that I have no idea what his market's going to be, just because he didn't produce a ton of numbers in Miami.
Yeah.
But his advanced metrics were very, very good, and I could see him being a guy that a team that isn't quite as good takes a bigger chance on financially in order to kind of see what he's got. So.
And he was in Portland when Vanderpool was there too, because he was in Portland
for
been there his entire career except for Miami. So yeah, he knows Vanderpool. Vanderpool knows him. So it could turn out to be a decent fit.
Yeah, I think so for sure. Like if there's any guy that you want to, you know, if there's a guy that you want to have get creative in terms of how they deploy guys defensively, I think Vanderpool is that guy, just because he somehow made a team have a top half defense. With
Damian Lillard and CJ
McCollum. Yeah. So
he's
all about having two-way wings and bigs that can defend. So if the Timberwolves can kind of follow that mold in the sense of having a kind of a minus defensive point guard and surround him with a bunch of different guys that are versatile two-way players that can you know, really defend on the wing and be good off the ball. I think that Myers Leonard could fit into that and would be an interesting guy to have fit and would be a guy that I think fans would love. I strongly recommend you go follow him on Twitter or Instagram.
Yeah, he's so funny.
I'm already seeing stuff too. I think the Heat got to the bubble yesterday, which was Wednesday. And I think I've already seen some tweets about how people are saying that Miles or Myers Leonard is a strong early contender for for like content creator of the bubble so far.
A picture of him walking around with some like Miami Vice clothes. I think it was Miami Vice clothes and then some army combat boots. So he is a character for sure.
He's awesome. His relationship with his dog is great. The two of them are so funny. His wife is hilarious, too.
Yeah, and she's a... I feel like she's an athlete. I could be wrong, though.
I think she played some sport. I think she might have played soccer at Illinois, which is where they both went.
Yeah, and she... Yeah, so...
They have a podcast together that's pretty funny.
And he's... I don't know. He's all over the place. He's streaming on Twitch, and... Yeah, so it's definitely go follow Myers Leonard. Funny dude. Love to have him in Minnesota next year. But, is that it then? Is that all the power forwards? We threw a lot of names out. So there are options out there. If we don't get one of these names we threw out, I'm disappointed.
Yeah, I think that they could wind up with... I think they'll wind up with one of these guys or a guy that kind
maybe
of fits that mold. Via a trade. I don't think that they're going to trade for a power forward. I think they'll trade probably more for a stud player, but but who knows? We'll see what happens.
All right. Well, I think that's all we had today. So thanks again, Jack, for coming on. And this one was a lot of fun. I think people can now kind of understand and see some options that we could possibly have as our Wolves 4 next year.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd love to see any of these guys that we talked about here. Just because they're all available and they're all going to be guys that won't cost a ton of money except for maybe Serge Ibaka.
Right.
But yeah, bunch of guys that I'd love to see here next year.
Awesome. Well, again, I'm Brendan Hetke. This was Jack Borman, and thank you all for listening, and I'll catch you next time.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Start clean with Clorox, because Clorox delivers a powerful clean every time. Because messes happen. Because... I have a charcoal mask. Great, because why would I put that on my face when I could drop it in my sink? This is what I get for multitasking. Ugh, why is charcoal so sticky?
Hello?
Hey, Janice. I am so sorry. I thought I was on mute. No, we don't need to reschedule. I'll just stay off camera. Ooh, yeah, that happens. So start clean with Clorox. Use Clorox products as directed.